Welcome to ID the Future, the podcast about evolution and intelligent design. I'm your host, Ray Boland, and my guest is Dr. Howard Glicksman, who has authored an extensive series about the human body at Evolution News. So welcome back, Dr. Glicksman.
Thanks a lot, Ray. It's great to be here again.
Well, in this podcast, we're going to be talking about water, and water is truly an amazing liquid, extremely well-suited to be the solvent for living things. Now, Discovery Institute Press has released a book from Dr. Michael Benton, The Wonder of Water, and that can fill you in on some of the details about water itself. But in this podcast, we're addressing the need for water in our human bodies. So, Dr. Glicksman, why is water so important for human life?
Well, Ray, you know, that's like asking me why steel is so important for a skyscraper or wood for a log cabin. You know, by weight, our body is made up of about 60 or 70% of water. But when looking at life, especially human life, it's important that we look at it not only from the cellular, but also the multicellular level. In other words, not only from the cell, but also the body as a whole. So let's look at where water is with the cell. You know, two-thirds of our body's water is in our trillions of cells, and it's called the intracellular fluid. Now remember, the cell is surrounded by a cell membrane, and it has water inside it called the cytosol or cytoplasm. And this water has many chemicals in solution, particularly sodium and potassium and proteins. And then, of course, inside the cell is the nucleus and the other organelles that you'll perform the function of the cell, and they float around in there. But to live and work properly, the cell must have the right amount of water. But let's now look at the body level. The other one-third of our body's water is outside our cells, and it's called the extracellular fluid. Now, four-fifths of that surrounds and bathes the cells, and it's called the interstitial fluid, which means between the cells. But one-fifth of that fluid outside the cells is in your blood that flows within the circulation. So don't forget, the heart pumps blood through the arterial system to the capillaries in the tissues to feed our cells. Now, the fluid component of blood, it basically consists of water. It's called plasma or serum. So if there isn't enough water in the body, there won't be enough blood in the circulation, and the cells won't be able to get what they need to live and work properly. So that's why water is so important for human life. Our cells need it to live and work properly, and our body needs it not only for its trillions of cells, but also so that there'll be enough blood in the circulation.
Now, we also know that our body needs oxygen, and we have to breathe that every few seconds. But water is a little bit different. We know by experience that we can go a while without drinking water. So how does the body store it and make it available for where it needs to be?
Well, remember, Ray, you know, we just said that the water in our body is either inside our cells or outside of our cells. And if they're outside, it's either bathing the cells in that interstitial fluid between the cells, or it's within the circulation, called the plasma or the serum within the blood. Now, when the circulation downloads chemicals through the capillary, you know, they don't go straight from the circulation right into the cell. They actually go into the interstitial fluid. And from there, they go into the cell. So you can see that the water bathing the cell acts as a bridge between the cell and the circulation. Now, separating the cells from the fluid that surrounds them is the cell membrane, okay? And separating the fluid that surrounds the cells from the circulation is the wall of the capillary. And as luck would have it, water can pass freely through both of them. So life is a dynamic process, you know, where we're always losing water. You know, from respiration, we breathe out water vapor. From perspiration, you know, to help control our temperature, we have to perspire. And from the kidneys, which filter the blood and make urine. Now, this water leaves the body from the circulation, and when this happens, due to the laws of nature, specifically osmosis, water will naturally move from the interstitial fluid, the fluid that surrounds the cells, into the capillaries back to shore up what's been lost from the blood. And then the water from the cells will move out of the cell into the water that bathes the cell itself. So in this way, the body is able to shore up its losses for a while by sending water from the cell to the interstitial fluid, the fluid that surrounds the cell, and then into the circulation to the blood. So that's how the body is able to store water and transfer it to where it needs to be.
Well, that's really fascinating. So we have a number of different storehouses for water, but obviously, as you just said, we are losing water continuously. So what happens in our body when we do lose too much water?
Well, as we just said, although our body can store water so it doesn't need to replace it, you know, there are limits to how much water our body can lose before it malfunctions and dies. Now, for our cells to live and work properly, they have to maintain their volume and chemical content. And for our circulation to provide enough blood to the tissues, it has to have enough water to make up enough blood volume. So if you lose too much water, like, you know, when you're working or playing outside in the heat and the humidity, what you'll experience is related to both cell function or cell malfunction. You know, usually you experience it more in your brain and your muscles, and also total body malfunction, mainly through the cardiovascular system. So, you know, the body contains about 40, 42 liters of water. Let's say 40 liters of water. Now, when you lose about 5% of that, you know, which is 2 liters, and typically you could do that when you're running around and doing things, you know, you're going to feel a bit tired. But if you let it drop to 10%, that's 4 liters, then you'll feel a bit sluggish and a little weak. Now, let it drop to 6 liters, that's 15%, and you'll have problems concentrating, you'll experience dizziness and flooding of your heart, and you may not even be able to sit or stand up. And, you know, let it drop to 20%, you lose 8 liters of water from your body, and you're likely to become confused, lethargic, and lapse into a coma. And when it reaches 25%, about 10 liters, then you're as good as dead.
Well, you know, I've been backpacking in the Grand Canyon numerous times, and from the rim to the river and back out again, spent as many as 3 to 7 days in the canyon. And that's a desert environment. And it's always struck me that at every trailhead, there's a nice sign that says, make sure you have sufficient food and water because 10 to 12 people die in the canyon every year. And I'm presuming that's probably because of dehydration. And the stories that you hear is that people will miscalculate how much water they think they'll need, or they think they're so fit, whatever, and then they get in the canyon, they don't have enough, they start to lose water, and you don't even notice the water evaporating from your sweat because it just disappears immediately. And people end up, as you just said, they get a little disoriented, and sometimes people have actually started climbing up the rocks because they lost the trail, and of course they fall. And sometimes hit their head or break a leg, and they never get out, and all you find is a corpse. So, yeah, we can indeed lose too much water, and it's important to pay attention to those signs you've just been giving us. But how does the body even know that it needs more water?
Well, you know, lucky for us, our body has a way of knowing that it needs water so it can tell us to drink. Now, remember, water is important to the body not only at the cellular level, but also the multicellular or total body level as well. So it just so happens our body has two different ways to accomplish this task of knowing what its water content is. Now, at the cellular level, when the cells lose water, just think about it. You know, their volume goes down, so they shrink a little bit, all right? And there's these specialized cells in the hypothalamus, and they're actually called osmoreceptors, but they're what we call shrink-sensitive cells. And they detect this change, this drop in the volume, and they send nerve messages to the thirst center in your brain, in the hypothalamus, actually, and it tells you to drink water, all right? Now, at the multicellular level, specialized cells in the main arteries leading to the brain and in the kidneys, they have sensors that detect blood pressure and blood flow. So when our body loses too much water and the blood pressure and blood flow drop, these cells send out hormones that stimulate the thirst center as well, and it also tells them to drink water. Now, just like when we hold our breath, you know, experience tells us that, you know, we can ignore these messages of thirst and, you know, they'll probably just become more persistent and intense. Like, you know, maybe those people out in the canyon, they, you know, they've had that in the past. They probably had that desire, but they sort of say, well, I'll be okay, you know. Mm-hmm. But as we lose more water and fail to do something about it, things get worse. And, you know, until we finally give in, okay. And when we finally drink some water, it enters our gastrointestinal system, generally is brought in through the small intestine. And there it travels into through the capillaries, and once again, it reverses what we just talked about when the way the cells can supply water to the circulation. Now it goes the reverse. Osmosis makes it goes the back into the cells. So the water fills up into the circulation. The water goes there from there to the interstitial fluid, the fluid that bathes around the cells, and then from there into the cells. And, of course, as the cells plump up again, you know, they go back to normal and the blood pressure starts coming back and blood flow starts coming back to normal. So these signals turn off and you're no longer thirsty anymore because everything's come back to normal.
Hmm. Well, you know, fortunately with oxygen and breathing, we don't even have to think about that. Our body just does it. And there are sensors and so forth that send out messages and we breathe. But with water, as you indicated, you know, we actually have to make a bit of a decision to actually carry that out. But oxygen is just readily available all around us. Water isn't. And obviously for our earliest ancestors, the water just wasn't always available either. So what else can the body do to try to control its water content?
Well, you know, besides replenishing our body with water, it also has to conserve it as well. And remember, we mainly lose water from respiration, perspiration, and urine formation, okay? Now, when you're working or playing hard out in the heat and humidity, you know, you're going to lose even more water by breathing faster and harder, and you're going to lose more water by perspiring more because your body has to try to control its temperature. So even at rest, you know, you can't stop breathing or perspiring, you know? So you're always going to lose water that way. But the only way the body has to conserve its water is therefore basically through the kidneys. Hmm. Every day, the kidneys filter out about 180 liters of water. Now, we just said that the body has about 40 liters, so that represents 4.5 times the total amount of water in our body. And since we just said that you die if you lose 25% or about 10 liters of water, this means that if your kidneys were filtering all that water and they didn't bring any of it back, you die in about 1.5 hours. Now, it turns out that our kidneys are preset to automatically bring back about 90% of that water that it filters. So that still leaves 10%. That's 18 liters. That's still a lot of water, right? And if it didn't bring any of that back, well, then you die in 12 hours. You got to live a little longer, you know. Now, the key thing here to remember is the same mechanisms we just talked about for thirst. You know, the shrink-sensitive cells in the hypothalamus and the specialized cells in the main arteries leading to the brain and within the kidneys that detect blood pressure and blood flow, the ones that sort of send the messages for thirst, well, they're also responsible for the release of a hormone called antidiuretic hormone, ADH. Mm. Now, the word diuretic, you know, sometimes patients are given diuretics to make them urinate. Okay, so an antidiuretic would be a medicine to make them not urinate or for the kidney not to produce as much urine. That's what ADH stands for. So the more water loss in the body, the more ADH is sent out from the posterior pituitary gland, the pituitary gland, but the back part of it. And it travels in the blood and attaches to specific ADH receptors. You remember we talked about how all this works. You've got to have a hormone. It's got a three-dimensional shape and with a certain amino acids, and it has to lock in like a key in a lock onto the receptor on the cell that's supposed to do something and tells it to do something. And when it locks onto those receptors in the kidney tubules, it basically says, bring back more water because we really need it. So this is how the kidneys help the body conserve water, and is why when you work or play out in the heat and humidity, you'll produce very small amounts of very concentrated urine. But, you know, but if you're relaxed in a cool place, drinking lots of your favorite beverage, then pretty soon after, you're going to urinate a lot of, you know, dilute urine. Once again, lucky for us, our body has it figured out already.
Well, it sounds like we have another very irreducibly complex system, even to regulate something as ordinary themes as water. And I'm just curious, if Charles Darwin were sitting right in front of you here and he was up to speed on everything we just talked about, any question in particular that would occur to you to ask him?
Well, there's actually three parts of what I talked about, I think, that I would sort of question that we would require answers from. And the first one is, which a lot of people don't think about, and I want you guys to think about it, is that, first of all, the distribution of water in the body. Okay, we've said that, and this is really due to the sodium-potassium pump, but 2/3 of your water is in your cells. Okay, the cells need water, no question about it, okay? But 1/3 is outside the cells, and 1/5 of that, so in other words, 1/15th, about 6 or 7% of all your water in the body is in your bloodstream, all right? So you got to have enough of that for blood volume, blood pressure, and blood flow. So where did that information come from to make sure that there's enough water in your bloodstream? We all know about the cell, and Darwin has talked about cells and molecules, et cetera, but they never talk about the body as a whole, the multicellular organism. So the distribution of water in the body is very, very important, not only for the cell, but also blood volume. Now, the second thing is that what you've referred to, the irreducible complexity of these systems we just talked about. We're talking about thirst and also water conservation. You know, you need to have a sensor, like the osmoreceptor, the cell that in the hypothalamus that is shrink-sensitive. It says, hey, the cell just got, you know, a little smaller. It reflects all the other cells in the body, but this one happens to react to it and said, hey, we're losing water, you know? And then the cells in the kidney and the arteries that detect, hey, the blood flow, blood pressure is dropping a bit. That means we're losing a little water here. So that's the sensor. The cells have to know what to do. They put out, either they send a message to the thirst center, which has to know what to do, or also sends out enough of this ADH, which then goes to a specific receptor in the kidneys that says, you know, bring in water. And but the final thing on top of that, so there's irreducible complexity. All three parts have to be, otherwise there it doesn't work. But the part that I like to talk about above and beyond irreducible complexity is what I call natural survival capacity. Because we know that you die if you lose 10 liters of water, 25%, okay? So anyone who's driving, think about this, okay? You're driving your car, and you got the gas gauge on your dashboard. Now, what if that gauge was not calibrated properly? Let's say you only have half a tank of gas, but it keeps telling you got a full tank of gas, all right? You know, you're heading for disaster, right? Well, the same thing here. How does the body know when it has to kick in to start either drinking water and how much water to bring back from the kidneys to prevent it from dying? Because these are specific numbers. Once you lose that, the pressure drops, the cells get too small, and they die, and they just don't work. So there's all that information that's available. And those are the type of questions that I would be asking Mr. Darwin, or Sir Charles, we could call him.
So that magical elixir of natural selection doesn't really solve the issue, does it?
You know, I think it takes a very, very great imagination to really see how this could solve this problem. Yeah, and don't forget, this is only one of all the other systems we can talk about. Because they're all the same. Blood pressure, you know, oxygen concentration, you know, calcium, sugar. Mm. All the systems have to be in place, lists like this one, and working and getting the numbers right, what we call the Goldilocks principle. They all have to be just right, otherwise you're dead. So there's only two options on the table. Either it came from random chance and the laws of nature on its own, or there was a mind at work. And for my money, it's much more plausible. All human experience points to it having been intelligently designed.
Well, this has really been a great discussion today, Dr. Glucksman, so thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Ray.
Well, for ID the Future, I'm Ray Bolin, and thank you for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.